morning and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington on this pre-recorded program. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, June 17, 2020. A civil society activist is detained by South Sudan's national security officials in Juba.
I wait up to 4 and then I phone the office. I want to confirm my brother is here in the office or still. And then the office informed me that your brother went to the office of national security. Up to now, he doesn't come.
And an international media watchdog says press freedom is declining in Sudan.
What we have heard and gathered from Sudan is that journalists are under tremendous pressure. They are not able to criticize the government.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Relatives of a South Sudanese civil society activist says the National Security Service has detained Moses Mande for campaigning against corruption in the country. Mande is the executive director of a local non-profit organization for non-violence and development. Civil society activists say Mande was summoned by the National Security Service this week to explain his involvement in anti-corruption billboards placed across the capital, Juba. For VOA News, Lasuba Memo reports from Juba.
Moses Mande was arrested yesterday after responding to a summons from the National Security Service to explain why he is involved in erecting billboards with anti-corruption messages across the capital. According to other civil society activists, Mande and other activists are taking part in an anti-corruption campaign branded at Gurush Wain, an Arabic phrase meaning "where is the money?" Mande's brother is born John Abbas. Tells South Sudan in Focus his brother alerted him on Tuesday that he was going to the National Security Service office by the River Nile, and since that time he has not heard from him. Abbas says his brother's phone has been switched off.
My brother told me in the morning he's going to the office. He came to me and then he told me, "Brother, I'm going to the Office of National Security about the issue which I told you. Inform me already about the issue of the banner." Finally, I wait up to 4 and then I phone the office. I want to confirm my brother is here in the office or still. And then the office informed me that your brother went to the Office of National Security. Up to now, he doesn't come. So that's why I know that my brother is in National Security.
Lupai James, the officer in charge of peace building at ONET, confirmed the incident, saying his boss is being detained at the riverside for carrying out "Where is the Money" campaign against the lack of transparency by the government. James said ONET representatives met today with national security authorities and were told Mande is under an investigation.
We managed to meet one of the authorities there in the national security. He also made it clear and confirmed that yes, Moses is there and under investigation. That is one. And then number two, the issue is just related to this campaign on financial accountability and transparency, the raising of the billboards on Gurush Wain. That's the issue. And then from our discussion, we have seen good kind of talks.
When contacted for comment, government spokesperson Michael McQuay said he was not aware of any activist being detained.
Well, I have no knowledge about it. And above all, I'm in my house. I've lost my elder wife and we are now here. So I'm not aware of whatever is happening over there.
Organization for Responsive Governance, the OK Africa Foundation, are also involved in anti-corruption campaigns. Local NGO Community Empowerment for Progress Organizations, or SEPO, is another group involved in the "Where is the Money" campaign. Edmond Yakane is SEPO's executive director.
Today we try our level best to reach out to find out what happened to our colleague and what is wrong. But our main call and our main appeal is that his safety and protection is paramount for us. Wherever he's been home, we hope that he's home in a safe hand and he's home in hands where he's not undergoing any form of torture.
Yakane is calling on the authorities to arraign Mande in court and describes his arrest as arbitrary. For VOA News, I am Lasuba Memo in Juba.
A media watchdog says press freedom is declining in Sudan. The International Press Institute wrote to Sudanese Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok expressing concerns about incidences of what the group called harassment and threats against journalists by a body set up to remove the structures of the ousted Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir. The media watchdog says Sudanese journalists should be allowed to operate freely during the COVID-19 pandemic. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio report from Washington.
Ravi Prasad, Director of Advocacy at the International Press Institute, says, while press freedom has generally improved in Sudan since the ouster of former President Omar al-Bashir, journalists in Sudan have experienced harassment and intimidation for doing their job in recent months. He says the office of the Prime Minister must do something about it.
What we have heard and gathered from Sudan is that journalists are under tremendous pressure. They are not able to criticize the government or the Empowerment Removal Committee, which was set up by the government to remove the structures that were created by the previous government. Now, the situation is pretty bad, and we would like his intervention to set it right so that journalists are allowed to function with freedom and be able to speak truth to power.
The Empowerment Removal Committee was set up based on Sudan's transitional constitution, which calls for dismantling the June 1989 regime's structure for consolidation of power and building a state of laws and institutions. But more recently, Prasad says, the committee has played a negative role in press freedom in Sudan.
While its role should have been to enhance press freedom and allow journalists to function, reveal what has happened during the previous regime, it has in fact cracked down on press freedom. It has written a letter to the Sudanese Journalists Union asking them to hand over their headquarters to the ERC. The Sudanese Journalists Union president has been threatened with arrest. An arrest warrant has been issued against him. And there have been other cases of ERC harassing journalists.
Sadiq Darizegi is the president of the Sudanese Journalists Union. Speaking in Arabic, he says, the media environment in Sudan is not good right now because the executive branch of government still controls a lot of media outlets. He says, some newspapers have even been confiscated. The Sudanese Journalists Union has been dissolved and the Empowerment Removal Committee has issued an arrest warrant against me, the president of the union, asking me to hand over the union's offices to the committee. Rizegi says the arrest warrant against him has yet to be effected. Prasad says, a recent amendment to what is called the Dismantling of the June 1989 Regime Act includes a 10-year prison term for anyone who is found guilty of criticizing the committee. He says this has severely compromised freedom of speech in Sudan and created an atmosphere of intimidation for journalists.
The International Press Institute is asking Prime Minister Hamdok to immediately intervene and order the ERC to first recall the warrant they have issued for the Sudanese Journalists Union president, stop harassment of all the journalists, and most importantly, amend the act in which provisions have been made for imprisonment of journalists for criticizing the ERC.
Prasad says the media has a crucial role to play in Sudan's transition and should be allowed to operate without hindrance.
When Prime Minister Hamdok took over, there was hope in Sudan and amongst journalists that they will have the freedom to function. That is no more there. So we want the Prime Minister to direct the ERC to withdraw the arrest warrant and stop harassing journalists, rescind the amendment that has been made, and make sure that journalists are allowed to function freely.
Prasad notes that journalists in Sudan also recently called for the lifting of lockdown restrictions on their movement. He says under COVID-19, it's very important that newspapers and other media outlets are able to operate freely in order to inform the Sudanese people on the state of the global pandemic. The International Press Institute says it is ready to support the media in Sudan through capacity building and knowledge exchange programs. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
Still on Sudan, the Sudanese transitional government has approved a plan to implement UN Security Resolution 1325, which addresses the impact of war on women, equal participation in conflict resolution, peace building, humanitarian response, and post-conflict reconstruction. Sudanese officials say the plan aims to enable Sudanese women to participate in maintaining security and peace in the country. For VOA News, Michael Atid reports from Khartoum.
Resolution 1325 addresses the impact of war on women and the importance of women full and equal participation in conflict resolution, peace building, peacekeeping, humanitarian response, and in post-conflict reconstruction. Suleyma Ishaq Al-Khalifa, head of the Gender Department at the Sudan's Social Welfare Ministry, says the Council of Ministers approved a plan to implement UN Security Council Resolution 1325 for Sudan last week. Speaking in Arabic at the official launch of the plan on Monday, Al-Khalifa said Sudanese women have suffered long enough under oppressive domestic policies.
This plan shall enhance women's participation in peace building or rebuilding of development after the peace agreement in war-affected areas. It shall also provide protection for women, including protection from all forms of gender-based violence. We also expect that the plan shall empower women economically and socially.
UN Resolution 1325 requires parties in conflict to protect women's rights, to support women's participation in peace negotiations, and to protect women and girls from wartime sexual violence. Al-Khalifa says most of the country's policies over the past three decades did not reflect women participation in peace building or development, which he says tarnished Sudan's image.
Our position among the international community has witnessed a significant change. We have been removed from the blacklist of countries that who have less commitment to protect women and girls. These changes demand us, not only as the country, but as a community, to be different when it comes to dealing with women issues.
Amna Adam Fashir works with the Women's Association in Sudan's western region of Darfur. Speaking in Arabic, Fashir says the national plan will help women in war-affected areas become aware of their rights, including compensation through the courts if those rights were violated.
No single police case has been reported by any woman in Darfur concerning physical assault, rape, or any other gender-based violence that happens to them. This is one of the problems that have been facing women in Sudan. We regard the approval of this plan as a big achievement for Sudanese women.
As a Sudanese woman, Fashir says, she is well aware of the impact of certain cultures and traditions that restrict women's voices and participation in social life. She says local authorities and civil society activists will work together to educate men about the importance of Resolution 1325.
We want to see into it that when there is family dispute among our communities, women should be given the right to speak up and express an opinion. We don't want men to speak on their behalf. Our men should also educate themselves on the resolution as well.
Sudanese Labour Minister Lina Sheikh Omar says the plan will contribute to providing development and reconstruction in war-affected areas, including Darfur, Southern Kordofan, and Blue Nile. Omar says she believes the plan will also empower women economically. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, health officials warn smokers in South Sudan. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how can you help someone dealing with depression?
I just give my time to that person and we discuss matter concerning that depression which that person is facing. First of all, I'll find out what is depressing that person. And when I find out the root cause, of course, I try to advise the person according to what he or she is going through.
By counseling the person through counseling and then sharing ideas, maybe sometimes going out for football or watching football, movies, such things can also help.
I recommend music, the music therapy. Music therapy in the sense that music has a way of giving a soothing feeling whenever the person listens to music.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Health officials in South Sudan warn that smokers who contract COVID-19 are more likely to suffer as compared to non-smokers. Some smokers in South Sudan say they think smoking helps their bodies resist the coronavirus. But the deputy manager at the Public Health Emergency Operations Center says anything that produces smoke in the lungs is likely to worsen the conditions of people who contract the coronavirus. For VOA News, Ding Magod reports from Juba.
Speaking in Arabic, 35-year-old Juba resident Farik Musa says he smokes shisha because he believes it will protect him from contracting the coronavirus.
Shisha is banning the presence of corona in our bodies. If we smoke it, it will help our body to prevent it against the coronavirus. That's why these days we have even been smoking it more than before. We were not smoking it frequently like these days, but we believe it keeps us safe from getting coronavirus. Though the doctors are refusing it, but it keeps us refreshed.
32-year-old Juba resident Yedjok Agwet, who works as a freelance translator, says he smokes because it helps him to focus and reduce anxiety when writing or proofreading text. He says he has smoked for 14 years and knows it is a bad habit but finds it difficult to stop.
Unfortunately, I'm well aware of the risks of the smoking. But, sometimes when it comes to addiction in its nature, it's illogical. Yes, you know what you are doing will harm your health and so on, but still you carry on smoking and so on. Now, for instance, I cannot cross, I cannot go for long walks. I cannot run for about 2 or 3 minutes. And even I stopped exercising any sports.
Dr. Angelo Gopthorne, Deputy Manager for the Health Ministry's Public Health Emergency Operations Center, says anything that produces smoke in the lungs usually causes respiratory illnesses that could worsen if a smoker contracts the coronavirus.
The advice that I want to give to those who are consuming sugar, please let them stop it immediately. At least for this time of pandemic, because if you continue smoking shisha in this time, you are actually 3 times likely to get serious symptoms when compared to the people who don't smoke shisha.
Until there is a vaccine or cure for COVID-19, people should not smoke at all, says Dr. Thorne. Dr. Kajam Suk Abdallah Moy, a chest physician at Juba Teaching Hospitals, also says smoking cigarettes or shisha can cause serious health problems.
It can cause chronic bronchitis, and it can lead to cancer of the lung. This is tobacco, whether it is cigarette or shisha, can affect even most of the body tissue organs. It can affect the heart, can lead to ischemic heart diseases. It can cause cancer of the throat, that is larynx cancer, cancer of the cervix in women. It can lead also to early stillbirth, that is death during labor.
The World Health Organization says on its website that COVID-19 is an infectious disease that primarily attacks the lungs. It says smoking impairs lung function, making it harder for the body to fight off coronavirus and other diseases. The World Health Body also says tobacco is a major risk factor for non-communicable diseases like cardiovascular disease, cancer, respiratory disease, and diabetes, which puts people with these conditions at higher risk for developing severe illness when affected by COVID-19. For VOA News, I am Ding Magot in Juba.
Still on COVID, on Monday, the World Health Organization warned that the corona pandemic is still worsening globally, with more than 136,000 cases reported worldwide on Sunday. Reuters' Gloria Tesso reports.
More than 136,000 cases were reported worldwide on Sunday, the most in a single day so far. That announcement comes just as countries like New Zealand, which no longer has any active coronavirus cases, further relax their stay-at-home restrictions. Technical lead Maria Van Kerkhove urged countries not to let their guard down too quickly.
So let's celebrate the successes that we do have, but let's remain focused on the remaining work that needs to be done, because unfortunately this is far from over.
The WHO noted that the pandemic has not yet hit its peak in places like Central America, where infections are still on the rise. Brazil is now one of the hotspots of the pandemic, with the second highest number of infections, only behind the United States.
Cameroon is one of the African countries worst hit by the COVID-19 pandemic and has been struggling against misinformation and fake news on the virus. Cameroon Digital Fast Response have taken to social media to counteract the misinformation. Muki Edwin Kinzeka reports for VOA from Yaoundé.
Treasure Famonui, a 13-year-old who escaped from Cameroon's English-speaking northwestern town of Kumbo a year ago, after his school was torched by armed men, has joined 300 other school children at the Etukebe government school in Yaoundé to ask for closed schools in the English-speaking northwest and southwest regions to be reopened. Famonyo says he does not want his peers to continue to be deprived of education.
I stayed in the house for 3 years without going to school. I don't want my brothers and sisters who are in the northwest and southwest to be stopped from going to school. Many of them want to be doctors, teachers and presidents.
Famonyo lives with his uncle, who has agreed to pay his fees. He said many children lack the opportunity he has. Muma B. Yvonne of the Cameroon Women's Peace Movement is asking for the rights of children to education to be respected on the Day of the African Child in memory of the June 16, 1976 street protest in South Africa against poor quality education there. Yvonne says the situation in Cameroon is becoming worse because children are outrightly denied access to education.
We are sincerely calling on the stakeholders to stop hostilities. Please, please, our children need their education. Without education, they are nothing. Education is their right.
The separatist crisis began in 2016 when English-speaking teachers and lawyers organized protests against what they called the marginalization of English in the majority French-speaking nation. The military responded with a crackdown, and armed groups took up weapons, saying that they were defending their people from military brutality. Separatists called for a closure of English-speaking schools until the crisis is solved. Some parents transferred their children to be educated in safer French-speaking towns, but a majority of English-speaking students have remained at home, according to the government. Asheri Kilo, the Secretary of State in the Ministry of Basic Education, says the government is determined to educate all children, but that some schools are constantly attacked, torched, looted, or are occupied by separatists.
In the Northwest, 46 elementary schools were burned down by the separatists, and 24 of those schools were occupied by them. In the Southwest, there were 73 schools burned and 35 occupied. Of course, the military is taking care of getting the separatists out of the school campuses that have been occupied.
The separatists have blamed the military for torching schools and public buildings and said they will allow children to go to school only when the central government withdraws its troops from the English-speaking regions. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
The South Sudan National Security Service is detaining a civil society activist for campaigning against corruption. Moses Munday, executive director of the local NGO Organization for Nonviolence and Development, is being held at a national security facility in Juba. Munday was arrested yesterday after responding to a summons from the National Security Service to explain his involvement along with other activists in putting up billboards around the city with anti-corruption messages. His brother says he has not heard from Munday since he went to the National Security Office. Lupai James, the officer in charge of peace building at ONAD, confirmed that the activist is being detained by security officials. Press freedom is on the decline in Sudan, that according to the International Press Institute. The institute told Sudanese Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok in a letter that it's concerned about recent reports of harassment and threats made against journalists by Sudan's Empowerment Removal Committee. That's a body created by the transitional government to remove government structures left over from the Bashir administration. It says Sudanese journalists should be allowed to operate freely, especially during the COVID-19 pandemic. And finally, Sudan's government has approved a plan to implement UN Security Council Resolution 1325 for women, security, and peace. Officials say the plan aims to encourage women to help maintain security and peace by taking part in the democratic transitional process. The resolution addresses the impact of war on women and the importance of women's equal participation in conflict resolution and peace building. Suleyma Ishaq al-Khalifa, head of the gender department at Sudan's social welfare ministry, says the Council of Ministers says women have suffered for far too long under the former administration's oppressive domestic policies. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Sowata by Emmanuel Kembe. Listening to Emmanuel Kembe with the song Sowata. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for the coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Let's go.